We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben. And
tonight we are looking at the fourth-ish episode. It seems like so many more of Fantastic Journey. The episode entitled Children of the Gods.
With a title like that, you should already know.
You should know. Our intrepid travelers come through another portal into a place that's sort of Greeky-like. And they decide to set up camp. Then they meet a boy who's escaping from some other boys. And Scott thinks, wow, it'd be great if I had another boy around. But he won't talk to them. And then he escapes. And then they find out it's all this stuff with these kids who don't have any old folks around. And they don't like old folks because old folks discipline them. And discipline's bad. And if the other kids don't like it, I will discipline you too. Willoway is a cranky old fart, but he sort of says things that are sort of optimistic in sort of a Kirkish sort of way. And then they have a fight because the kids fight for dominance in their non-disciplined-y disciplined way. And in the end, everyone lives happily ever after. So how is this episode for you?
Well, let me start off. For those people who follow Eugene on Facebook, now I don't know if you did it on the Fusion Patrol page or your own, maybe you did both, but you posted an article about, you know, the 12 most overused stories.
Yes.
And I wrote a comment saying that there was one that had been clearly omitted. This one is it.
The youth and the
children who are on their own story.
Yeah,
the whole Lord of the Flies, whatever you want to call it, it's the children community kind of story. I can't tell you how much I hate these kinds of stories. So having said that, let me just say regarding this episode, I was shocked that there were parts of it that I didn't hate.
I'm going to say I have to agree with that to some slight degree. I am going to say, though, that if you are a writer and you come up with the idea that says, I'm going to come up with a society of children who distrust elders, unless you're going to kill them off at age 31 or, sorry, 21 at Carousel in the books or 30 in the movies because Michael York looked old, unless you're going to kill them off, you have got a fundamentally unsustainable proposition going on.
Pretty much, yeah.
you're going to get old, and then you're going to be one of the old people. You're going to be one of the grumps.
You're going to be one of the grumps. It's Miri all over again.
I wish it were so good.
And that's not saying much.
It was so, you know, the part of the episode that had to do with, well, we got rid of the old folks. Well, they call them elders. Is that it? Or the old
elders?
Elders or olders? Or I can't remember because
they called them elders.
Elders. I didn't write it down. And because they used to discipline us. And we don't like that. We live free. Except that it's so obviously no different whatsoever. And it's even with a bunch of kids, it seems completely untenable that even our lead guy, who was that Pat Sajak as a young man? I'm not sure.
It might have very well been.
Should recognize, hey, I'm the oldest. I should be the leader. It's like, whoa, did you actually say that? We got rid of the old folks because they were mean, so that leaves me in charge because I'm the oldest?
Well, that was one of the things that was really bothering me. The big thing that was just it's the big white elephant in the room as far as this particular story goes. I mean, there's a lot of other story things that are happening here which just I thought were completely ludicrous. But that concept of the leader being Alpha, as he's called.
Wow, imaginative names.
I know, Yeah, putting himself in that position simply because of his age and the whole hypocrisy of it. And it was this that just really began to eat at me, which is where the surprise comes in, and that's with Willoway.
Oh, damn it. Damn.
I was going to try to intercept you before you got into this, because I was going to take a guess that the only thing you liked in this episode was Willoway.
Yep.
Yep.
He was the only good thing in this episode.
He shocked me, because even the first thing he did when they set up camp was, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to go look for stuff.
That's what I have in my notes. I have him. I wrote that he was being cast as the Dr. Smith of the show.
Except when they decided that they were going to, I don't know, look for the boy or whatever it was that they decided to do, and his Dr. Smith would be completely against it. But in this case, his thing was, well, I already know how I feel about it, but I realize that you're not going to do that, so go ahead then. It's like, whoa, Dr. Smith with a brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah, there was a lot of very good mental jujitsu going on throughout this episode, especially in the dialogue between Willoway and Alpha. I was very impressed at the fact that, you know, that at least the writer had the presence of mind to use Willoway as the voice of reason and continually point out the hypocrisy of the story.
Well, here's Willoway being the person, even though he's a cranky old guy, here's Willoway being the idealist that Varian says he was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very bizarrely written character in that respect, because he is so sort of misanthropic, and at the same time, you know, oh, guns, when is man going to stop killing each other?
Oh, like, the pain.
It was like it was two different characters trying to thrash them together, and yet it worked. It worked far better than I had hoped.
Well, I would attribute that to Roddy McDowell being able to find that balance in delivering both aspects to the character.
Yeah, but you have to give the writers some credit for even trying that.
True. It's a very bold move.
You're going to be this cranky Dr. Smith, but you're actually also going to be an idealist who's quite clever and eloquent in your thoughts and actions.
Well, that might have been what drew Roddy to the part.
It could be. I forgot what he said in that article we referenced, because we didn't mention Roddy McDowell.
No, because Roddy had not appeared in the show yet.
But he did talk about how he was drawn to the part, these sort of fantastical parts, and I don't remember that he said it was anything to do with the dichotomy of the character, but nonetheless, yeah, it was the shining moment of the episode was the fact when he was doing stuff, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. It was his dialogue that he had with Alpha that when he's a prisoner at one point in the city, and this wonderful discussion that's going on where Willoway is finally getting to the bottom of what Alpha's issues are and how there was one elder that had befriended Alpha and had taught him some really great ideas. That elder got killed, and now Alpha says that, well, all elders are now evil. You know, and Willoway makes that deduction that elder was probably his father. So there's some really great nuanced acting that's going on there that does not stretch credibility as far as the sake of the story goes.
No, it doesn't. Because just looking at Alpha going on about how all elders are evil. Well, I mean, except for that one who was like really cool and taught us about like art.
Yeah, but then he died, so they're all evil.
So it's all,
well, and not only is it all evil, but everything that elder taught him was false. But he still holds that elder in high regard.
Which basically means he's an idiot.
pretty much. And Willoway kind of calls him out on that, too.
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
That was one of the things that I really liked. That was what made this episode. It kept it from being my Naked Montague.
Naked Montague was your Naked Montague.
Well, of the Naked Montague of this particular series.
Now here's
it didn't have it didn't sink to that level.
Here's an interesting thing, and when I say interesting, it means I'm stretching. This society, kids, young, running places, alphas getting older. He's the boss, right? In a ordinary world, they'd have to kill him and eat him so that they wouldn't have any elders in the family. But, and this is the important part, I'm quite sure that that corridor set where they came in is exactly the same corridor set they used in a episode of Logan's Run where they returned to the domed city. In fact, I think they went through the same water canal thing, tunnel, on the way in. So there's your Logan's Run tie-in between the young civilization and the and another young civilization.
Well, never having really gone that far into the TV series of Logan's Run, I mean, I didn't get past three episodes. I'll take your word for it.
For now.
For the moment,
bum,
yeah.
Bum, bum.
Yeah, I can see the writing on the wall. I know that that's a show I'm going to have to watch at some point. Bloody hell.
If you can just get past the theme music. Oh. Anyway. What else? What's this? This is going to be our shortest podcast ever.
It really is because there's not a lot going for it.
Leanna was useful. She had her powers back. She could give a temple
she could,
rub
she
that
helped
put people
kid.
Out.
Yep, she was able to do that. Varian, we saw more of his magic wand powers in helping the little kid, whatever that kid's name was, go to sleep.
Okay, that one, I'm okay with that one. That one is not.
Actually,
that one seems
no,
like
no, because
healing
yeah,
thing.
it was a sonic treatment.
Yeah,
so that, yeah, I actually don't have a problem with that.
More than exploding the locks or stunning people, I can buy the healing, soothing tones of the tuning fork.
The tuning fork.
Tuning fork.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Remember Harrison Blackwood?
Yeah. Bing! Yes, yes.
And that's Harrison Blackwood from War of the Worlds, folks. Mm-hmm. Just in case you were missing out on that pop culture reference.
Yeah.
If indeed War of the Worlds could be considered
pop culture. No, thank you.
All the hipsters.
Great.
Kids
that
are
means we're not going to be at some point watching that show as well.
We might actually escape that one because it's too long.
Two seasons,
and that second one is quite the trudge.
That second season is abysmal. Anyway.
So the power, I believe that's a timing light for a car.
I think you're right.
And I believe it's hidden in a meatloaf pan.
Probably, yeah.
I thought when they pull the thing out and it goes, the power, and I'm going, the power is a meatloaf?
Hey, you know, I'm sure that the prop master, you know, fashioned himself as the next Fred Freiberger and thought, hey, I can come up with really, you know, I can find exotic devices and call them whatever the heck I want. You know, Fred had a knack for picking out exotic salt shakers and turning them into surgical tools for Star Trek. He had a gift. I can't say the same for this guy. Because I kept hearing about the power and he pulled that out and I went, oh, okay. Yeah, I'll try to contain my fear.
Yeah, it's
tragic. And it's just another tragic element of, I mean, yeah, I said there were a couple of things about, you know, well, basically one thing about this episode that I liked. Everything else about it was tragic. It's really bad.
Did Pete? No, not Pete. Is it Pete?
You mean Fred?
Fred, Pete. Pete's dragon, Fred's dragon, whatever it is. Fred. Did Fred's antipathy towards Willoway seem right to you?
No. For some odd reason, it felt, I don't know, there was something very, very weird about this. I mean, we get right from the very beginning, there's this fascinating banter between Fred and Willoway. And I kept thinking, well, are we supposed to just like assume right off the bat that Willoway's been pretty much accepted as a member of this group? I mean, we have no idea how much time has lapsed. I mean, we can only assume that. I mean, it's been 1 week in terms of television time. Have no idea how many zones they passed through since they picked up Willoway as part of their team to when they entered this particular realm. So there's no real way to gauge how much time Willoway has been with them. But Varian seemed to think that Willoway was easily an accepted member of the group, but of course Varian would, since he seems to hold Willoway in high regard. But to me, it felt ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten past quote-unquote the pilot phase, where we're introducing everyone, and now we have gone into true episodic television where they won't remember what happened last week.
Yeah, everything's reboot.
Everything reboots every day, so we have got the dynamic, I think, the way it is. But I just felt like, I mean, yes, if this were truly the next episode after the Willoway's Robots episode, or whatever it was called, I can see how everyone should be annoyed and dislike him, because he was annoying and unlikable in the previous episode. He was worse than unlikable in the previous episode.
He was kind of evil.
Yeah. And then here there's this sort of like, well, we ought to leave Willoway behind. Fred Pete sounds, I don't know, bitter, or I'm not getting why he's the one who hasn't kind of made his peace with Willoway. I guess maybe that's the plan, is that he's Major Don West to Willoway's Dr. Smith.
But I know that's going to change. Oh. I know that in later episodes that element will go away and stay away.
So Fred Pete will be Will Robinson to Willoway's Dr. Smith.
No, Scott will.
Oh, yeah, they have that boy in this episode.
Yeah.
Gosh, it sure would be nice if there was somebody my own age along on this trip.
You know, he's really irking me right now, that kid. You know, and it's nothing that I've got against Ike Eisenman. In fact, I seem to remember that there's at some point, if memory serves, at some point in this series, he's going to undergo a huge growth spurt. And I mean a physical one. I mean, he really just grows a lot. It really, really fast.
Show didn't last long enough for him to grow much.
But it was very obvious. At least it was to me when I saw it way back when, and I'm really anxious to, you know, kind of watch it now and see if I was just imagining things. But right at this moment, maybe it was, because right now, well, I remember back then he annoyed me. But at some point he transitioned, and it's like, you know, as a teenager, I watched him. I thought, wow, he seems to have kind of actually emotionally and physically grown up a bit. I mean, it was obvious just to look at. It's okay. He seems to have filled out. He's gotten a bit taller. Voice got a little deeper. Thank God.
Do we lose that golly gee whiz?
I know. He's so Gomer Pyle at times. It just makes me nuts.
And his dad wasn't like that.
No. So where is he getting that from? The mother?
Seems hard to believe.
I mean, we don't know. We really don't know much about the mom anyway.
That's true.
So who knows?
She could be Gomer Pyle.
She might be.
But
yeah, Scott's very irritating at present. And the whole bit where he has to challenge Alpha for a fight. I mean, I suppose it's okay that Scott lost the fight, because it would have been ridiculous if he had won.
I have to say, I looked at that fight.
But the fight was embarrassing to watch.
It was embarrassing to watch, and I have to say that I'm looking at that going, yeah, okay, it's 1970s, but Scott, knee him in the nads.
I was going to say the same thing.
That's, you know, all he needed to do.
All he had to do was just give him one good kick right between the legs, and you are now Alpha.
Yeah, it's like that was not much of a fight.
No, it was pathetically bad.
I honestly thought at some point Alpha was going to hold his hand out and put it on Scott's head, and Scott would be swinging his fist. Put him up.
Swinging wildly, yeah.
And it was that badly, Corey.
It was that bad. I mean, even though it didn't reach that depth of comedy, it was a very badly choreographed fight. I just hated watching it.
Yeah. So now what's the deal with having the super secret underground city, which is quite an impressive city, really, for just the small amount of space they were taking up?
Yeah. Get the feeling it's a very small community.
And then the Greek ruins.
Ugh. Yeah, I'm trying to rationalize the Greek ruins on this island. I mean, and I couldn't do it.
I'm thinking that maybe this was Greece. I mean, he did say when they told him, I'm from America, he said, we know of America. That's on the other side of the world or something like that.
Yeah.
There was something he said that made me think that they were supposed to be in Europe. And so I suppose this could be a civilization plucked out of 21st, 22nd century Europe. And so therefore Greece, Grecian temples could in fact be there. But it was just an odd juxtaposition. And apart from the Greek ideal of beauty and truth that they were trying to convey across... Yeah, it's just...
And that whole bit where earlier in the episode, Willoway is reading some inscription from a Greek scholar or philosopher named Pindar from 500 BC. And I felt, well, that's something which I kind of feel sort of... The fact that it exists, the fact that it's there,
Chekhov's
kind of get
gun.
The feeling. Yeah, I don't know. I felt like it just... It was something that was just going to be left alone.
Well,
and
it just
and it just adds to the whole. I hate to use the word mystery, but just this rather odd shoehorning in of this Greek presence, if you will.
Yeah,
I just couldn't quite make that work in my head.
I'm guessing that that's meant to be the writer has shoehorned it in because. It is the supposed ideal of philosophical thought in the human classical history. That's the only thing I can think of. It's like you could just sort of it's a stereotype for people who sit around in robes and contemplate beauty and their navels and what is the meaning of life and the wrecked city and the surviving kids and their... The world is as far away from that as you can imagine, and yet they still worship it because it gives the... Oh, yeah, there was that little lesson there about, religion is the pablum of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
They worship it. So, you know, I don't buy this stuff, but it keeps the rabble down believing in that stuff. So I just take 10% off the top and, they do what I say. It was definitely a bag of ideas that they threw in there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good way to describe it. They just threw all these story ideas, whether they made sense or not, into this episode, and just thought. And again, I don't know. Are the writers just not that clever, or do they think the audience is not that clever? I'm terrified that maybe they think it's the latter.
I don't know. The writer of this was Leonard Katzman, who apparently wrote a lot of Dallas. So there you go.
Oh, great. Nighttime. Okay, primetime soaps. There you are.
Well, but wait. So now let's see if we can do this. Dallas, Patrick Duffy, Man.
Are you
Atlantis,
going for a 6 degrees of separation?
Yes, we've got it. Okay, but
there's
the other
a
hand,
6 degrees. We didn't even 3 degrees of separation, and we've just proven that this episode's a piece of crap.
And also Wild Wild West and Gunsmoke, amongst other things. So I mean, he was obviously a working writer. This is not his only credit. He worked on even good shows like Wild Wild West. Although I'd like to know which episodes he wrote.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that.
Kind of, it doesn't actually show on his IMDb profile, so that's kind of a shame. But I would have liked to have seen if they were good episodes or they were like The Night of the Naked Montague or whatever. That'd be kind of funny, actually.
No, thank you. No, not funny.
Not
tragic, scary, horrible, but not funny.
What else have we got?
Well, like I said, there's a lot of bad characterizations. The Alpha is just really bugs me to no end. And again, during the fight, we've got Willoway, who's again, well, actually, I think Varian is in on this one too, trying to do the whole mental jujitsu thing, and But I think Varian's Will Away is the one who's really taking the charge and trying to get Alpha to realize the error of his ways. And he even gets Alpha to admit it, that yes, he's doing exactly the same thing that the Elders are doing. And
but somebody's got to, damn it.
Well, but then they're kind of going, yeah, and he comes off with, but I thought I could do it better. So yes, he gets his little bit of resolution, but. And I don't know if this is because it's a fault of 70s television, but it really was. I mean, you described in your synopsis, this was a happily ever after, because Alpha all of a sudden does a complete 180 and is now going to be the benevolent leader.
And they left him as leader.
They left him as leader.
Because he's the oldest.
Because he's the oldest, yeah. Well, he had a change of heart. I don't know.
It really
was absurd.
It really was, it's the height of hypocrisy that we banish the old folks because the old folks are bad. And then not only do you not, well, we don't know what kind of civilization the old folks had, right? But my guess is it did not involve the oldest person being the leader.
Probably not.
It was probably some sort of democracy or dictatorship or something completely different, something analogous to what we would understand as a government form.
Mm-hmm.
And then you overthrow that, get rid of the old folks, and instead of implementing any kind of representative government or anything else, you actually implement the oldest guy rules.
it was a Lord of the Flies.
They didn't even have the conch. Who's got the conch? There's Piggy's glasses, and what's his name has the conch shell, and it wasn't even that, because they didn't devolve into barbarism. They devolved into the.
Well, they didn't have enough time to devolve into barbarism, and that was one of the things I was puzzling over earlier in the episode. Was before we get any explanation as to how they got to be there. And I kept thinking, well, it's one of the things that I really hate about child societies is how does it sustain itself? At least with Miri, we got an explanation in that there was the mutated virus, which gave them incredibly prolonged life. We weren't getting any kind of explanation as far as how the kids were able to survive for so long here. But then that young kid, I mean, what is he, Sigma, Theta? I don't know. Omicron? Who knows? He finally confesses that it was within his lifetime, I believe, that the war happened.
Yeah, well,
the elders of their community had been all killed.
It was 37 years ago.
37? Was it 37?
No, I'm making that up.
You're just making that up.
Obviously, none of them are 37 years old.
No, and they're all aging at a normal rate.
And if they got rid of the elders, then none of them were born after the elders were gotten rid of.
Yeah, which again—
Are there any girls?
I didn't see any.
So that's another problem this society—
But then it's
have.
A very big city.
Yeah, but they've named themselves after the letters of the Greek alphabet, so there
so
can't
you can't
be
have
many
that
of
many.
Them.
That was going to be my next point. Okay, I mean, there are, how many letters in the Greek alphabet? Is it 35 or something? I can't remember now.
I think it's fewer than English, isn't it?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. It's been that long.
Let's say it's somewhere between 20 and 30.
Yeah, that's a safe bet. And so where do you go from there? Alpha 1? Beta 2?
Yeah, like I said, you have to eat the oldest.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, Alpha, I'm afraid we've run out of letters in the alphabet.
You're first to go. Bon appetit.
Your life clock has started to flash.
Now, that's a show I'd watch. That's a show that I would watch.
I mean, it's
a weird take on Logan's Run, but it'd be really far
out. I think
out.
It's going to be a reality TV show next season. So.
Oh, boy.
Cannibal Island. Actually, I should write that one in.
You know, you better. Copyright it, at least.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can make a fortune on it.
Alrighty, dicey.
I mean, I've really got nothing else. I mean, the ending was ridiculously cheesy, but as I said, this is, it's very 70s TV. I mean, it screams 70s TV, and not in all the good ways. So it dates itself poorly. And this was at a time when everything was about optimism, I suppose, because we're still coming out of Vietnam. So we want to really kind of have a really good optimistic spin on our, and everything. Yeah, and I thought the ending of the story just had the worst rush to it. We just ran to that finish line so fast that I could not believe anything that had happened. And I really believe that if this same episode were being told today, that this ending would have been significantly different, dare I say gritty. So in that respect, I did not find that this did not hold up. Not in the slightest. I mean, it served its purpose for 1977, but holy crap, it failed if you're trying to apply today's social values to that.
It's interesting that you should mention this 70s optimism thing because, I mean, it's widely credited that between the Vietnam War and Watergate, this is what has brought about the cynicism, the defeatism, the all of those not Star Trek attitudes in our society. And this film is clearly after both of those. But you're right. There is this sort of chipper, happy ending sort of mentality to the shows of that era. And I wonder if that is intentionally the studio executives fighting against, well, reality.
Hmm. And that's kind of where I was going, because if you look at other television shows that were on, I mean, I'm not talking so much about the dramas. I didn't follow that many 70s dramas at the time because I just thought that
the Waltons, Apple's
no.
Way.
Well, okay, yeah,
Eight is enough.
Waltons, I did watch.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I did watch that. But the others, no way, Jose. I thought they were dreadful. I stuck to the comedies and the variety shows as badly done as they were.
Ah, Shields and Yarnell.
Ah, now, hey, now we're talking. Now we're talking. I mean, that's talent.
That was.
May Lorraine Yarnell rest in peace. That was talent, so I'll give them that. But if you looked at a lot of the other television shows, you know, especially the sitcoms, I mean, everything was really about, even with the acerbic stuff that you were getting from like All in the Family and with Maude.
Norman Lear stuff.
With the Norman Lear comedies. I mean, they were still trying to kind of, you know, in Jeffersons, they were still trying to kind of throw in something with a slight optimistic twist at the end. In most cases. Not all the time. I mean, there were some that just got downright bleak. But there were others that, a lot of times, you know, they tried to come up with something that had a nice little bit of a lift to it because they were comedies, you know, and you had a live studio audience. So you didn't want your audience to kind of go home all kind of glum. So I think that was kind of indicative of maybe 70s television at that time to at least give them something that's a bit upbeat. And I don't know, maybe NBC was, surprise, surprise, suffering from Star Trek hangover and thought, you know, maybe we can kind of end up with something that's slightly positive as far as the ending of an episode goes.
Yeah, could be. Well, I think this one we're going to walk through another one of those little portally things and move on to the...
And a bit adieu to this dreadful community.
And see if what dreadful community will be through the next hill.
Oh, God, I can only imagine. I have no idea.
Thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all for more of our fantastic journey through television next time on Fusion Patrol.
Bonk, bonk on the head.
Priceless. Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolfe.